As fall fills up with activities and obligations, even a small time saver can feel like a big help. Grammarly is an all-in-one writing tool that makes clear, concise communication easier than ever, so you can finish your work earlier and head off to family dinners, social events, and fall weddings. Grammarly is free to download and works where you do, so every project gets finished quicker. Make sure your writing is free of mistakes with Grammarly's free, comprehensive writing suggestions and get an instant take on how your message comes across with the free tone detector. Let Grammarly Premium's sentence clarity rewrites help you find the perfect words on the first try. You'll be confident writing client emails, deadline-driven reports, and presentations without staying late at the office. Get more time back in your day by writing with Grammarly. Go to grammarly.com/podcasts to sign up for a free account. Then get 20% off when you're ready to upgrade to Grammarly Premium. That's grammarly.com/podcasts.
You're listening to the Write Room Podcast with me, Rupen Paul. I'm a stand-up comedian from India, and this is my weekly podcast, a show where I have conversations with people whom I consider accomplished, entertaining, and inspiring.
All right. Hi, guys. Welcome to the Write Room Podcast. My name is Rupen Paul, and you are listening to a new episode with a comic who's joining me from Bombay, a comic who I performed with, I think sometime in 2015, but is joining me, of course, via call on this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Deep Chabria.
Hello. I hope this is clear. I've never done one of these online podcasts.
You haven't? All right. It's easier. Dude, for some reason, right? I think online, it's a lot more safer than just doing a face-to-face podcast. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there are many reasons, I'm sure. Like, you don't have to really seem that interested. You can just, like, lag when you want to. Like, you know, you can do all those things. But otherwise, yeah.
It's the same fuck-up that I have with the Zoom shows. The Zoom shows made me feel really confident.
Yeah. Dude, I think anything Zoom is just delusion. It's the same like online dating, right? Like when you're talking to somebody online and when you meet them, you're like, oh, same person, but doesn't feel the same. Like, it feels a little different.
Doesn't feel the same. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what it is. Yeah, but it's really cool, dude. I think I performed with you probably in 2016 at Canvas. Do you remember?
I actually don't, man, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, it's a long time ago. I think it was probably before you went to the US for a brief bit. You were hosting. I was doing an open spot, obviously, right? I was at that time at Canvas, right? And I just realized, you know, like the staff at Canvas had not been paid for a really long time. And when the thing is, when you don't get paid, right, you automatically hate doing your job. So everyone would just treat me with so much of contempt right from the beginning. I'd be like, hey, I have a spot here. Who are you?
Yeah.
Who gave you the spot?
Yeah. Canvas also, like, I think Canvas was like, till you made it to the best in shows that they had, they were all lovely people. But it's just that the comedians aren't really fun to be around, especially when they're climbing up, you know. It's just that I think once they get good spots and all, there's some sense of security, they're better people. So I feel like they also dealt with some real, like, weird, desperate people all the time. So they, after a while, they also couldn't tell the difference of, yeah, are you a good guy? Are you not a good guy? So they just had their walls up to whoever would come and, you know, ask for stuff.
Yeah. Especially if you have to keep meeting opportunistic people all your life, if that's part of your job, right, at the gate. You're just meeting opportunistic comics. It's like, hey, I need to get in here somehow. It can be missing out.
Yeah, man. It's not fun. You know they're not talking to you because they want to talk to you. They're talking to you so you can recommend them or so you can go like, that's a nice guy. Like just hope of nepotism somewhere.
Yeah. So I think that was the show, dude. I think you were hosting. I don't know if you did, at least the day that I performed. I think the weekend was how many days at Canvas that time? 4 days?
Four days. I mean, it changed a lot. Canvas as a place, I think, changed also a lot. But like, I feel like there used to be 5-day weekends, went into 4-day weekends and things like that.
Yeah, so I think you were hosting. That was the first time I performed. Of course, I think I performed with you in 2019. But both those times have been fun because firstly, I really like performing with a Bombay comic whose majority of the set is in English. I really like it.
Yeah, man. Now it's completely English. Like, first it used to be like part Hindi, part English. But like now, first I used to do the simple trick of like set up English but punchline Hindi. And like, that's what literally worked on YouTube, I guess. But now I feel like now I do like 100% English. And like, even like the thinking has changed to English, which I'm kind of happy about.
Right. Oh, you mean like the comedy, the joke writing thinking has just changed to English?
It's completely changed to English. Like, it's no more a Hindi thing.
Like, on the outside, this is what pisses me off, dude. It really pisses me off. Like you're on the outside, right? Like, I can, like, just by reading you, I can just be like, dude, this is a guy who speaks English to majority of his friends. He doesn't speak to them in Hindi, right? So, like, if I see a comic like you speaking in Hindi, automatically I'll be like, dude, why is he speaking in Hindi? That's not him.
Yeah. Which is actually very weird, because I actually speak to my closest friends in Hindi.
So, you do? I was
kidding. I actually do. So, to my closest friends in Hindi. But that said, I feel like that shift really happened when I went to New York, right? To study for a year. And just for people on the podcast, like I really wanted to do comedy full time. But I also liked advertising. I worked for a bit. And then I wanted to do like this for like my life. And I'm like, I just want to do comedy. And then my cousin and my mom, like, you know, talked me out of it and said, you know what, just take this course up. It's called Miami Ad School. Go to New York, you know, just like you can do advertising and comedy. And I'm like, okay, that is a great opportunity. Like, I can do that. So I'd gone for that. And once I went to New York, I just realized that, dude, like you realize it's okay to speak in Hindi if you're a Hindi speaker, like you said. But I feel like a lot of comics use Hindi as a crutch. You know, it's basically like, you know, Hindi will make it sound funnier as opposed to the joke actually being funny, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I went there, I realized that, and I was handicapped. I really just had to speak in English. So like the first 3 months of performing there was just speaking in English on stage.
Oh, you had to get used to that?
Yeah. It was because, you know, your brain doesn't work like that. Like, it's just your brain has been like, you know, I'll throw in a Hindi abuse here and there. I'm going to get a laugh somewhere. That's, you know, a lot of it. I'm going to make a catchphrase out of me that can be a merchandise, you know, like that thinking. But then you just have to be English. And then I realized I really like performing in English more than anything, because it makes you really universal. So say tomorrow somebody puts me on an international stage, I will be way less conscious than I would be if I was a Hindi speaker. Or if I was someone performing it.
Right. I think, I do all my stuff only in English, but I think I still wouldn't be that comfortable performing on an international stage, because the only thing at the back of my head is, will people get all these jokes? Because all of these jokes are about people who live in India, right? Did you have that trouble when you made the shift?
I really feel like we also have a lot of inferiority complex as Indian comedians, right? I feel like there's a lot of, like, we're constantly thinking, will people get this or people not get this? And it's absolutely normal, right? Because, you know, it's like suddenly you get leveled up, you know, and you're just like, it's also then you realize actually that people know a lot about Indians. People know a lot about, of course, if it's super local and contextual, they're not going to get it. And that will be for any kind of humor, right? You know, if somebody is performing in South Texas and is a South Texas comedian and they come and tell you something, you're not going to get it because it's just contextual. But other than that, if it's about comprehension, I feel like people get comprehension, man. It's really not a...
I think we are, in many ways, we're like more similar than different, right? Like, if you've seen Coming to America, have you seen Coming to America?
I haven't.
It's one of those iconic Eddie Murphy movies, right? And so it's actually, the entire plot is such a Bollywood plot, dude. So Eddie Murphy is trying to escape from an arranged marriage, right?
Okay.
So he leaves his country and said, I can't get an arranged marriage, and he basically goes, I need to find someone. That's the entire plot. And they use the word arranged marriage in that movie, right? So we are, I think, in a lot of ways, we are more similar to each other than, like, I think, different.
Dude, we really are. And it's very shocking, actually, like, in many ways. Like, I feel like, there are, like, you know how you really blame Bollywood for a lot of these, like, shitty plots that we keep rerunning and things like that? I feel like Hollywood does the same shit, dude. It's just that it's white people, better locations, good cinematography, and good music. So you're like, oh, like, suddenly this is a Christmas special. But it's the same trope otherwise. It's just like, I'm telling you, it's inferiority complex. It's nothing else. We're just, like, slaves to white people mentally.
Right. Yeah, dude, it's absolutely true. Especially if you do like corporate events, right? And you go to a corporate event and you see like there's a boss who's like really made it. He comes in a BMW to the hotel and all that, right? And there's still a white guy. And you know, like when you're doing a corporate event, right? Like there's always the junior level employees look at the senior level, like, hey, is that guy laughing? Cool, then I can laugh. And it's always like the Indian dudes looking at the white guy, like, hey, is this guy enjoying? Is he getting the jokes? Is he happy? Are we making him happy?
Yeah,
just ingrained in us, I think.
We're constantly representing India as people. I feel like if you think about that, like as you step out of India or if you just step into a space where there's somebody who's not Indian, it becomes your moral obligation for you to make sure that that person feels his country is not as fuck all. it's really that.
Yeah. I think it's a similar problem. I think India is just like comics, right? Like comics have the same problem, right?
Like the India. Yeah.
You always want to represent yourself. You're like, hey, I want people to like me, man, at this point. I really want people to like me.
Yeah. I think it's any indigenous group of people who are insecure. Like it's just like it comes from there. Like, you know, white people are quite irreverent like that. But I mean, that's also comes from your, I think it's a privilege thing, to be honest. Like, because you're privileged, you don't give a fuck if they like you or they don't like you. You're just like, because I have the upper hand in this entire relationship. But I feel like we just, and that's something, we are born like that. Like, you know, it is always, we're very servile that way as people.
Yeah. We can't think of too many Indians who have actually not given a fuck about white people, right? Like, even historically. Like, you just be super irreverent to white people. Like, they don't matter at all. And you can just be like, hey, I'm cooler. Like, for example, like in the Philippines, right? The Philippines is really cool because Philippines is not like really talked about that much, dude. But one of the world's greatest boxer, like Manny Pacquiao, is from the Philippines, right? And he's been whooping white guys' asses and other people from other countries' asses. So everyone who comes out of the Philippines can still walk with a lot of confidence. Be like, you know, we have one guy, right? Like, who is our guy?
I mean, I feel like you have a lot of these... I hate being like taking a cricket reference, but like it is just like, I'm just like not a person who watches a lot of cricket, but I feel like, I like, you know, think of somebody like a Sachin or whatever, like they did whoop a lot of white asses that time, but like the pool of cricket is also very small in the world. People don't get it, like, you know, that entire conversation about like the cricket World Cup is 10 countries or whatever, man. Like, it is not really the World Cup, it is only the ones who play. Yeah.
But even that also is not fully correct, because like even when Sachin was in his prime, right? Like the reason why we really liked him was when he played Pakistan, right?
We should have been really happy
when there should have been an India-England rivalry. That would have been a way better rivalry, right?
I mean, India-Australia was always rivalry, but it was more of like, we hope we win. It's not an equal rivalry.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, we hope it's a good day. They are having a bad stomach. You know, it's never... it was that.
Yeah. What were you doing before you started stand-up?
Oh, man. I started stand-up really young, actually. I started stand-up when I was 18. So, I was in college. Like, I was in my second year of college. So, before that, I think I was just...
What were you studying?
I was doing mass media. I think it's called something else in Bangalore. Everything is called something else in Bangalore.
MS College like in Bangalore.
Yeah. Here it's Bachelor of Mass Media, which is like going for college fests. Like, you basically just go for college festivals for 3 years. That's what it is. And I actually comedy kind of came to me because Ashish Shakya used to teach in my college.
So, oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah. So he was the creative
writing
teacher.
What was he teaching?
And
the creative writing. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So it was like, not everyone opted for it, but it was like one of those courses you pay 2K extra and then you take this class on the weekends or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I took that up and he asked, like, you know, does anyone like doing comedy or somebody wants to try stand-up? So I feel like, so Shakya came and started this creative writing course, and that's the time when there was literally like one open mic a week. And like, you know, there was nothing else. Like, there used to be Mocha Mojo, and then the next week is Ibar. So every Monday is an open mic. You know, there's nothing else. That's the scene. Your scene is 15 people or 20 people, right? And that's what the scene is. And so I said, yeah, sure, I want to give it a shot. So he said, cool, take it up. And then he tried, like, I wrote a set. He took me through it and things like that. Of course, it was so bad, you know, now that you think about it. And but yeah, that's how I started, man. So like, nothing really before comedy. And I weirdly feel like I've grown with comedy. It's very funny. Like, comedy has seen, and the stage has seen almost my evolution as a person, which I'm really happy about, to be honest. Because when I look back, I go like, I'm done with the stupid shit. You know, I'm done. It's such a big phase in comedy.
Yeah, I think a couple of points that you said just really stuck very close. Like, I think all of us kind of grow through comedy, right? Comedy teaches you a lot about life, right? It just teaches you about patience more than anything. And I think also, like, you're really happy that the stupid shit... I think this is one of the things about just getting older. You're really happy, if you do it right at least, you're really happy that the stupid shit is behind you, right? Like people say a lot of shit like, hey, I wish I was 16 or 17. I don't really wish I was 16 or 17, right?
Yeah.
I was so dumb at 16 or 17.
Yeah, man. I had no idea what I was saying.
Which is also like the reason why, since you've been doing comedy since, I'm guessing you're a little younger than me from the last conversation I had, which is years ago. You're probably 27 or 26.
28, right? 28. I just turned
28. 28. So the same age as, about the same age as me, right? But yeah, you've been doing comedy for 10 years now, dude. Right.
Man, I didn't even realize that, to be honest.
Yeah, when did you start? You remember the day and month?
I know it was November some month, some year, but I feel like it's 9 years now, actually, if I'm not wrong.
It is 9 years, yeah. In November of this year, you would probably celebrate 10 years, I guess.
Yeah, man, yeah. That's a decade of being on stage, and that's crazy.
That is, dude, because I think above everything, right? Like, you also kind of make peace with the fact that you haven't made it yet, because if you would have made it earlier, you would have been a lot more stupid. Right. So, think of it that way?
I mean, that's a very, like, I think what I've really made peace with over time is the idea of making it. You know, because I think that is a very flawed and subjective idea, to be honest. Because I feel like there was a point where I started putting videos, and like there was a time that YouTube was not that big, and I used to get like quite a lot of hits and things like that. And so I technically paid for my US whatever studies through comedy.
By yourself.
Yeah, through a big part of it through comedy. Of course, parents supported, but like a big part of it through comedy, because I was earning tons of money, dude. I was just doing, there was a time where my mom was like, she was going, helping me write checks, because it was like I was earning so much money. And I was doing like 5, 6, 7 corporate shows a month and like things like that. But I hated myself as a comedian. You know what I mean? Like, it's this complete insecurity of what the fuck am I saying? Like, I was only saying shit that people wanted to hear. So I feel like that way. And I mean, I would pull a small audience and people would know who I am and go like, oh, I know this guy. I've seen this guy perform. And then I went to New York and I came back and I was just a different person. Where I was just like, oh man, I can't do this for... Suddenly the art side of it came out and I couldn't hide who I was. I really was anymore. And as I was saying something, I'm like, this doesn't feel like me. You know, and then suddenly, and because I also got a job, I feel like that added so much more to not doing comedy for money. And I feel like once money came out of it, then the other thing I had to make peace with was fame, right? Because I feel like it's also about like, those are the two main things you do comedy for, right? I mean, people say it's things like, you know, I want to put myself out there and all, sure, good. And then it's the pure thing of creating, like, you know, and that you would do with anything, even if you do origami. It's like the pure joy of creation is the reason you pick up any creative act. And I feel like that's what I started doing. And I also had very ups and downs of like feeling insecure, not feeling insecure. But now I'm at a stage where, and I feel like this is kind of what growing up is, to be honest, where I'm like, dude, I am actually okay with not making it, you know, which is the stereotypical idea. I'm saying the worldly stereotypical idea of not making it. But I am not okay with not making shit.
Oh.
Okay, where I'm like, I want to keep making shit, right?
Yeah,
and that's what it is.
Yeah, I think so. That kind of changes, dude, after a certain point. That's quite a nice line, right? That's absolutely true, because you move from being like a person who's just taking from this art form, taking like selfishly to just feed your own ego ultimately, right? And into a person who's actually giving, right? Giving more shit, like making, like creating and producing jokes and videos and all of that, right? I think that's a very fundamental shift that happens at some point. Especially, it does happen at some point, like especially to people like maybe you and me, right, who've been in it for long and have not seen too much of it, right? We have not seen too much of like ticket seats, money and all of that. Because I think even ultimately, I was just speaking to some other comic, I think day before, right? And I told him like, as an English comic, I realized that the odds are heavily stacked against all of us. And I think now, and like, if you look at it, like in any other profession, it's not really a great model, dude. Like, for example, like if you had started advertising and like you had no paychecks at all in the beginning, but the only way is maybe if you keep showing up to office, one day we'll make you like the CEO of that advertising firm. Yeah. That's what we all are trying to do in comedy, right?
Yeah. But just from your perspective, like, do you still have an idea of what making it is, or like, you know, do you have that idea of what is it in your head?
No, like I said, it's all changed, dude. It used to be different. Like when I first saw like comics from Bangalore making it in Bombay, right? Like Kanan, Biswa and Kenny. I was like, oh, like you eventually put in the time, everyone's going to have that at some point. Then I realized, oh, it's not going to be everyone. That took some time. That took a lot of time for me to realize. Right. I think it's, I would say it took me 4 years for me to realize. It took 4 years and I had to quit my job. And then I realized, oh crap, it's not going to be everyone. And it definitely, in this case, is not going to be me immediately or at all. But I think so. Then my entire perspective changed when I put out a video, right? And the video didn't get a million views, dude. It didn't get a million views. It just got like some 480 something views. But the comments were so positive. The comments were like, hey, I really liked what you talked about. And I said, fuck it, I'll just do it for this.
And I think what you also said was really interesting. What is the perspective of giving? I feel like that is something that I don't think as people we think about so much. But it really is the fundamental of getting, you know. And we don't understand that as people. And I see that the most beautiful thing about comedy is, right, if you do it for the right reasons, it's a very good art form. If you do it for the wrong reasons, it's taking you down a gutter. You know, it's like any art. It's literally like any art. Like if you're painting to just create and have fun and be... Dude, I also used to think for the longest time you have to be fucking depressed and have bad shit happen to you for you to be a good comic. Right? I had a very warped perspective of if my life is fucked up, means stage is going to be great. But now that's completely changed. Now the more chill I am as at home, the more chill I am at, you know, as who I'm as a person on the inside, that shows on stage. You know, now I'm like, oh dude, I'm in a happy space and we're on stage going to have fun together. Right? Because
you're confident, like you said, more than anything. You're so confident.
And more than anything, I am not expecting anything. You know, I am not going there to fill my voids. You know, I'm not going there to go like, dude, I'm not saying, dude, give me love that I cannot give myself. Give me, like, you know, it's that entire thing of like, I'm not being a leech. You know, I'm not. And that's it. Then I'm giving. And what do you say? Like, you know, then I'm going into the attitude of, dude, I'm this really happy, chill person. I'm going to make sure when you walk out or, you know, at least in the 10, 15 minutes or 30 minutes that you're seeing me perform, I'm going to be this person. You feel my vibe. I'm going to feel your vibe. And you should go like, dude, I like that guy. Not because I'm saying as opposed to I want you to like me. I just, if we met at a bar and we were friends and I was like a random person introduced to you, you'd be like, do I want to know this person more? If I can leave them with that feeling and get slightly better at, you know, whatever their day was, we're good. Like, I'm saying I have achieved what I wanted to achieve.
Yeah, that's quite a perspective shift, dude. Like, was there a point where you had to sit and think, like, this is not what comedy is and I need to change that perspective? And what was that point?
Man, I think New York really shook me as a person. Okay. And I think this idea of what you're saying of not everyone will make it is so apparent.
In New York or like in the world, but after going to New York, it figured it out, like it's true for everywhere.
It is. Because I think after going to New York, it's because there, right, there are some 3,000 comedians at one time in New York, just in New York. Okay. That's not even like half of it is probably the Indian comedy scene right now, right? In India, right? I'm saying way lesser, I'm sure. Like, I don't think we have 1,500 comics in this country. Right. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know. I really don't know.
Not
like the
1,500
way it's
for sure, but probably, dude. Probably like close to at least 1,000, wouldn't you think?
I would say with like new, like smaller cities doing well and all. Yeah, definitely. I feel like that's a fair number to assume. Like you know, probably lesser.
Who's at least gone on stage to tell jokes? Yeah, at least 1,000 people. Yeah. Which is still very small,
Which is nothing, man. Well, I mean, if you go to New York, like, there are 3,000 comics in a city at a given point, you know? Yeah. Plus traveling comics and shit like that. And so how many do you think are going to make it, dude? Like, you know, I've seen people like, and I met all kinds of people. People who've been doing it, who've done it for the first time. So people who are doing it, who's had a breakup, to somebody who's been hustling, doing only the club scene for 6 years, to like somebody who's just now getting to open, somebody who drives another big comic around. I met all of them. Right. And like all, and you, when you see that, you just realize the percentage of people making it. And then what the idea of making it is also, it's so bleak, man. It's like, it's so little. It's like, it's not even 1%, you know? And then when you think of that shit, you're like, whoa, like, you know, am I like, no, then you go like, okay, then you have to go like, what is your idea of making it? That's where you go like, why am I doing it? Because it's, okay. I mean, honestly, there's a very beautiful book that I read last year. It's called Man's Search for Meaning. Okay?
Viktor Frankl.
Viktor Frankl, correct. And I feel like I think it's also become popular over the last few years again. A lot of people have been reading it. And I think he said a very beautiful thing is that man can figure any what as long as he knows his why.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that is like, I feel like at some point in comedy or in anything you do, any creative thing that you do, you have to ask what your why is. You know, because if you really, if your why is everyone's why, then you'll go into comparison, you'll go into, and half the time actually, we don't even know that we need to have our own why. You know, you're just like, this is what is told to you. You're told to have a lot, make a lot of money through comedy. You're told to like have fame. Like you're told to put up like a lot of shit. So, you know, people look at you and go like, whoa, what a funny person. But I feel like when, and you know, it's very funny. You'll see a comic who actually does all of this and still think they're shallow. You'll still realize they have some
very
depth.
True.
They have a lack of depth because they don't have a why. They're doing because everyone's doing it. Are they hustling? Definitely they're hustling. I'm not debating whether they are putting effort. Effort is, everyone puts effort, you know? But when you have a purpose, and purpose plus effort is direction, is growth, you know? Purpose, okay, purposelessness plus effort is survival, you know? Then you're just surviving. Then you're not growing. And I feel like
albeit at a higher level. Like even if you have like everything, like a special, like the money and the fame and the tickets and all that, and you have everything, is just you're struggling, but at a really, really, really high level.
I mean, which is worse, right? I think about it. Like, you rather struggle at a level where nobody fucking knows you. So your struggle is stumbling and learning. But you know, if you struggle at a level where people really, really know you and you don't know why you're doing this, then it's literally like the idea of crumbling and you're just holding on, which is like really depressing at all points. Then every joke you write, you think that this joke can fuck up my career, or this, it's
you just become extremely apologetic, I think.
Yeah, it's everything except the joy of creating.
Yeah, which is, I think,
Which is like a,
the reason why I think a lot of us started stand up in the beginning before we saw anything, especially people like you, dude, like who saw started comedy before, like, you know, the Amazon Prime specials, before the sold out tours, before the theater tours, before people going abroad and performing. It was just that, dude. It was just getting on stage. It was not even a fucking show. It was an open mic, right? That you look forward to. You look forward to doing an open mic where you get on stage for 10 minutes and you can be like,
four.
Really.
Four, man. There was no 10.
Minutes. Exactly. Open mics are always four. They'll give you a light at four. You got to get down with your set at five, right? And you look forward to that twice a week.
I would wait for that. Like, it was like, you know, like how people talk about how they used to wait for channels on DD. I used to wait for it, like, like that's the enthusiasm I had for it. Though there's something really interesting you said, and I feel like we can just talk about it for a second, is about the fact that, you know, when you start, I think it's that entire thing where, I think Bill Burr also said it once, is that, like, I'll take 20 years to become, or something to the effect, 20 years to become as good as I was the first time when I did comedy.
Yeah. You kind of re-find your funny.
And I think that's what really happens, is that it's this process of, you were a child and juvenile and you didn't know what it was, and it's like you're taking your first step, right? Mm-hmm. And you're just like, you know, you just it's like you know, like you're a child, you don't give a fuck. You'll walk naked in streets, like nobody cares. You don't have embarrassment, you don't have pressures, you don't have responsibilities. And like then the same happens when you're old, right? Like when you're like really old, 80 or whatever, you won't give a shit about taking a dump anyway. You're just like, this happened. You know, it's like you've become the child again. And I feel like true art is actually, or like the true arc of creativity is being that child again. And I feel like the fast,
it's a loop.
It is because you get done off your conditioning, you get done off your reasons, you get the right reasons. And I feel like it's so funny, which is why, think about it, like a lot of people who do become big, like if you see Louis C.K. from like say 2010, you will not like him as much as the Louis C.K. today. Right. And it's crazy because it's the same person. Like, and I'm saying, of course, he also masturbated in between. But like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just that in general, just the innocence of why you're doing it is something that's refound.
I think that's the most positive thing about just staying in the game for like long enough, right?
Yeah.
Because eventually you slowly, and I've seen the progress, dude, like not just with me, but also with like the comics who started with me, right? They've all gone on to talk about what they're actually feeling and what they're actually thinking through, right? And that's, I think, quite a big leap, dude, from where we were of, you know, trying to please the audience, trying to get a laugh, and also trying to make sure that the comics who are senior to us make note of us because we're killing really hard, right? To where we are right now when we have a really horrible thought, a really dark thought, and you have the ability to convert that thought into something tangible in terms of laughs. I think that is a really positive thing in just staying in the game for long enough.
I think that's also the fun of it, right? Like, it's also, I think this is also something I have noticed in just the time I've been here, right?
it's very easy to get insecure. Mm-hmm. It is like literally like, and I feel like for especially like me, right? I have seen people, and I imagine like I am this guy. Imagine me in a green room, and I feel like everyone around me has either gotten super fucking famous,
yeah,
or has left comedy, or yeah, there are even the people who came way after me are now super famous. And I'm the so if you had to do a time lapse of it, I'd be like the constant fucker, and everyone's going in and coming out, yeah, and going in and coming out, right? And that's what I feel sometimes. So yeah, I mean, I had bouts of like, who the fuck is this person? How are they so big? Like, and I had all of this. Now, when I go on stage, I'm like, if I go on stage on a lineup with comedians, right?
Yeah.
And if I don't kill harder, or if I don't kill as hard as anyone, or if I feel like I am not a good comic, that's where I've lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I then I've not been good enough. But I have, yeah, if I've not sold 20 tickets, that's not a validation of how good I'm at stand up. You know?
Yeah.
But right. But if I can stay in that room, in fact, open for somebody, and they go like, dude, that person was way better.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Then, yeah. Or even if they don't do that, but they still laugh at your jokes and you have a good set, right? You've still done well.
You've done, and I feel like that's, and this is one perspective. And the other perspective actually,
and I think that's also a very nice point of staying long in the game, right? Like, I think that's the second nice point, especially if you go up on a lineup with a bunch of other comics who are really well established, who have the specials, who are filling seats and all that. And you also kill, right? You're like, dude, I'm at the same level. On some level, I'm at the same level, right?
No, you are at the same level. Actually.
Yeah. You're a comic, like, you have original jokes, and these are jokes that have been rehearsed, and it's still working. Like, even though there's a comic who went on before you, who's super established and set the bar probably a little high, you were not able to, like, you know, you were able to match up, dude. You're able to level up at that point. And I think that's not nothing.
It is everything. You can be the most famous fucker, but not be able to lift a room up when it's silent. Not lift a room up on the basis of your skill, not your catchphrases or what your personality is or who, because they love you. If you can go and pure skill level pick a room up, you have done well, you know, and it doesn't matter how many tickets you sold that day. You know, it's like, and I feel like, I think about this, like a lot of times, haven't you heard about a lot of comedians where, you know, a friend of yours will go like, dude, we booked this guy or this girl's show, and we went and we checked him out and they sucked. So what do you get out of that show? You know, it's like somebody sold the tickets. Somebody heard you for an hour and didn't find you interesting, right? Of course, you can bomb. Bombing is completely different. Like, you know, we all bomb. We all will bomb till we do comedy. Very different idea. But I feel like the idea of just somebody not finding you interesting enough for an hour is enough for you to go like, I need to work on myself. But if you first become interesting and you go like, and you build the other way around, which is the tougher and the longer route, where somebody goes like, I heard this person for 10 minutes. Do they have 30 minutes to talk about something? If you talk for 30 minutes, does this person have an hour to talk about something? You know, then it's just you're way more confident in what you make. And then everything else will come. Okay. And if it doesn't come, it's still okay, because you're doing what you like doing. You know, so it is honestly a very spiritual path to understanding what pure creativity is. I feel like it is.
But I think that's a good point you brought up, right? Like, because even after some time, right? Like with comics who get like the seats and all that, right? Like you get who are able to like fill up an auditorium or a theater or whatever, right? Like at some point you get a little bit soft, right? You have to. I'm guessing you have to, because it's a little more easier than it was before, right? Like before you had to really, really, really work your ass to work a room. But now it's a lot more easy because they're paid to like you. They're paid to like watch you, right? So they're going to like you a little more. So I think I remember like there was this comic from the US, this guy called Matt Davis. Do you know Matt Davis?
I've heard of him, man, but like...
So Matt Davis travels the world. I think he's been traveling the world for the last 10 years or so. He has at least about 20 years of comedy under him, right? And what Matt Davis told me is, if you're at a room and you know you're going to kill, always measure something that is slightly difficult for you, and that will just keep the room and keep that night a little bit challenging. So in that way, you're not like, you don't get too soft as a comic.
Yeah. Of course, man. Yeah. Like, and I feel like it's very simple. It's like you going to a party and somebody going like, that was the most interesting guy in the group, as you being the host of the party, they'll have to like you. If the host of the party is also obnoxious, you don't hate them. You know, you go like, it's their house. I came here because this person invited me. I came here because I like this person. So please puke. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. Yeah. It's like, it's that entire, it's the same setup. It's just a little, because they have invested in you. Yeah. You know? So it's more about them than you, to be honest. It's more about like, right. if they don't laugh at you, it'll reflect badly on them.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that is also true. But I also liked an earlier point that you brought up, which I thought I'll speak to you a little bit about. You were talking about how, like, now you do comedy with a job. Am I right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and in a weird way, you also had comedy, without a job as the only source of income. And you were telling me, like, how right now it's a little more just saner, right? It's a little more just little more relaxed, right, than what it was before.
So balanced. It is so balanced. Like, I can't emphasize enough. And I have always been that, like, I feel like I... And this is something that actually is not just me. It's growing a lot in all other comedians, I feel. Like, yeah. See the comedians who have writing gigs going. They have become better comedians. See the comedians who are taking up, like, content jobs. They are better people. I'm just saying, it's because it's your entire existence is not dependent on those 10 minutes on every day. You're not comparing yourself. Basically, you go to a workplace and there are perils of a workplace. There are insecurities of a workplace. But if that workplace is staged, oh my God, that's lethal. You know, that is like the worst thing you could do to your, like, love for joke.
Yeah, but it's not just stage. It's also like what you mentioned. It's 10 minutes, right? Like, your entire day's happiness is based on that 10 minutes. And that's too little time, dude. Like, at least if you have a job, you at least have 8 hours. And in those 8 hours, at least some 3 hours will be good, dude, if you do it right.
Yeah. And I also believe that I personally love... I think I'm a creative person, so I'll create anything, right? Okay. So I love creating. And I feel like... And this is something like I got a lot... It got reaffirmed from this TED talk I heard by Taika Waititi, right? And Taika Waititi,
by who?
Taika Waititi, the director who did Ragnarok, Thor, and who did the Jojo Rabbit and things like that.
Jojo
Amazing,
Rabbit. I've seen Jojo Rabbit, right?
Amazing.
I'm just hoping that I've seen one movie because I've not seen Thor.
Yeah, I've not seen that. But Jojo Rabbit, the director of Jojo Rabbit, Taika Waititi, this New Zealand guy, if you listen to this TED talk. So I feel like I grew up with this insecurity which I think a lot of people face is that I'm a jack of all. I feel like, I do everything average well or like decent well. I'm not excelling at one thing, right? But when I heard Taika Waititi, it kind of reaffirmed to me a lot that, dude, creativity, right, is an expression. Now, as humans, you would express differently different times. You would cry, you would laugh, you would run, you would get angry, you know. Expression takes different forms. And that's the same with creative expression, is that your creative expression can keep taking different forms. You just have to know which form is it taking it now, right? So, for example, like, I love cartooning, right? So I'll just cartoon some shit. And I feel like I'm using really, like, I'm using visual humor there. I am, like, using, like, you know, I'm writing a punchline there. I'm creating a very nice scene there. I love advertising. I've been doing it for quite some time now. So I love advertising. I love writing film scripts. I love being on set. Right, I love doing that shit. I would love writing like a smart ambient idea, gorilla idea. I love coloring, you know. And these are ways my creativity manifests. And stand-up is one of them. You know, stand-up is one of the ways. And I'm feeling it now. Probably 3 years later, it won't be something that'll take precedence. Something else will take precedence. And that's okay. And that's fine. Yeah. Because it doesn't mean stand-up will leave me. It means like I just haven't... It's like how you don't have... It's like you've not done abs in a long time. But you can do abs whenever you want, you know. You know how to do abs, like, you know. So it's literally that. It's like comedy won't leave me, and which is why I feel like. But like now, imagine somebody whose entire expression is in one thing, and I'm saying some people can be, and I think many people are very, very happy with that, right? And great for them. But like for me, that's not how I can live. I need to be doing a lot of things to become a more well-rounded person. And I feel like the good thing it is that it all borrows from each other. Like, suddenly, sometimes I think of a joke and it's a cartoon. Sometimes I think of a cartoon and it's a bit. You know, I don't have to think of bits.
Oh, you mean like very specifically in terms of just creativity, not in terms of just happiness and satisfaction, but just in terms of creativity.
It is all this mushball together, right? Because I feel like the more you do all of these things, it's like you keep reinventing learning curves also. It's like suddenly, like, I'm taking cartooning now and I just want to, say, I want to publish my own cartooning book in the next 1 year. It's going to be a very different learning curve. And because I'm challenged here, I'm going to be happy, satisfied, excited. Now that excited will, you know, come on to when I go on stage. It's not like when I go on stage, I won't have fun. Because I am this excited state of being.
Yeah, I understand. No, I think whatever you said is, I don't really know how, like, looking back at it, it seems kind of fucking crazy of all of us, right? Like, I think all of us at some point did comedy alone, right? Like, with just relying on corporate gigs and other gigs that would pay money, right? And first of all, those gigs are so randomly... Just they come in so randomly, right? Like one day you get a call and that you'll be like, hey, okay, I'm actually gonna get a gig. And then for a few days you just don't get that call in a really long time. And you know, I was just filing my tax returns a while ago, right? And like the money that I made in that 1 year I was doing like the second year of me doing comedy full time was actually the same as my previous job. But it was the most anxiety ridden year ever, dude. It was not a fun year. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was fun in different ways. Like I learned a lot of other new stuff, right, outside of comedy. But it was just a lot of the time was very anxiety ridden. Like now that I have a job, I feel a lot more saner, right? A lot more happier doing comedy. And right. Also the fact that the lockdown happened and we all of us were without stand-up for 7 months, right? It just proved that it's not the end or it's not like, you know, everything.
It's really not, man. And I feel like that is such a big learning just in general that like people need to have is that it's, I think people just get insecure that like that stage will leave them, but it won't. Stage never leaves you, right? It's like, I think it's one of those things, right? Like it's like, have you watched Ozark?
I haven't, no.
Okay, so Ozark has this like very interesting scene where there's a pastor, 1 second. Like there's a pastor and he's going to basically kill somebody. You know, and it's like this tense moment and he's going to kill somebody. And like the person who's going to be killed basically tells him that, you know, you're not angry at me, you're just angry at God. You know, like, you know, you want to murder me, but you are just so confused that you have, your faith has deceived you or your faith has like, you know, you've not been able to keep up. And he says this one line, which like, whoa, that's kind of interesting. He says, anyone who has faith knows it's not a choice. It's a great thing, man. I feel like if you don't, there is something wrong if that doesn't happen, actually. Like, that's where you become redundant. That's where you look at comedians and go like, why the fuck is he or she doing a joke from like 5 years, which does not make sense. You know, which they only don't relate with it. So why should I?
Yeah.
You know, so and I feel like reinvention will always be a part of any moving forward.
Just a second. Just 1 second.
Sure.
Right. So I think, like you were saying, right, like reinvention and all of that. Even right now, I was just thinking, like, if I had to take a month off of doing stand-up, right, it will really freak me. Like, will people still respect me? Will people still know that I'm doing stand-up? Will I get spots and all that? But now I'm like, yeah, I think I'll manage, right? If I had to take a month because of something, like, say, go stay in another place or go stay in another city where there's no stand-up, right? I think it'll still be okay. I'll just find a way to enjoy that. And I'm not going to die because I have, like, other sources, other ways to make money. I think we all have other sources to make money right now.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you'll still be
working,
okay.
Though,
when you
man,
come back.
I didn't get that.
Okay, I work at the financial media company. Okay, so what we try and do is we try and simplify financial news, make it really simple. Right, and I basically got a job doing podcast, dude.
Yeah, man, that's fucking amazing, dude.
Yeah, pretty cool. And they pay me more than the old job as well, so even better.
Dude, so, it's so sorted that way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's I'm really happy, dude, because of the pandemic, right? Like it just shifted everyone's perspective of in terms of just importance we gave towards comedy. That is pretty cool.
I feel like what I think the pandemic actually has also done a lot of good in just talk about the fragile, like, you know, how fragile life is also. Like suddenly you see comics, people became better people if you think about it. Right, you know, like suddenly people spent more time at home with parents. Sometimes you're just like, you know, people learned how to cook, do basic shit. Like in India, we don't do a lot of our own like groceries and cleaning homes and things like
we
that.
We have servants.
Yeah. It's a Western concept. I feel like we actually realized the importance of shit. We were like, oh man, I can go to my terrace and take a walk. That must be a blessing. You know, so that has happened. Like suddenly I feel like we have really learned. I honestly feel this even when I've been going for, like, I did a bunch of shows last week. I've done like whatever five and I feel like there's just so much love suddenly. Like comedians, it was just so weird and it is not fake. You know when it's fake and it's like not real. But like it was like everyone's so happy to see each other after a year. Everyone
Wait,
is
this
so
was
happy
like
to go.
Other around. Comedians seeing each other?
Yeah. And they all seem in a nice space, man.
Right. When I went back to doing stand-up, it was almost like, you know, when you took the summer vacation and went back to school, You were like really pumped about seeing your friends back at school and like going and having PT period, right? That was the same thing that I had. It's like, oh, fuck, absolutely, it's going to be PT period all over again.
It is exactly that.
So I think the only way, what the one thing I've learned from the pandemic is, if you want to improve friendship, don't meet your friends in a long period
for
of time.
For a very long time, yeah. I think that always does the trick.
I was actually going through, I was doing a little bit of research before we did this podcast, right? I was going through your YouTube stuff. A lot of very, very different stuff, dude. Like, I've seen your stand-up, so I know your stand-up, so I didn't really see the stand-up videos, right? But, like, you posted a video of you doing 100 uncomfortable things in 100 days in, last year?
Yeah. What made you do that?
What made you do that challenge?
Man, in, like, anyway, I feel like, I mean, the honest answer is a breakup.
Yeah.
But, like, in general, I'm a person, like, who loves, like, doing new shit. Like, if I'm not doing new shit, I feel, like, uncomfortable as a person. And then and I'll tell you, like, it was a very random thing. I mean, we were all home anyway, like, you know, things like that. And, like, office was also getting really crazy. And I've always been someone who picks up random projects. Like, I've done something in the past where with a friend in New York where we used to go and wrap really sad news in bubble wrap and put it all over the city. Because so your people are less stressed about bad news. Right? We just used to do, like, random shit like that. So we've done, like, a lot of, like, weird things. And I feel like...
What was the sad news like, if I can ask?
I mean, anything. Like, you talk about, like, you know, like, immigration or whatever. We used to print those, like, news headlines out, put a coat of bubble wrap on it, and stick them all over the city. So, like, when you... Like, you already feel stress-free while pressing the news article. Right?
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it was like... I've always done random shit like that. And
right.
I anyway had a feeling that I was getting too comfortable in who I was as a person. And that is something that I'm not okay with, right? Like, I just don't like being comfortable as a person. And then one day, my mom was just like, I was cleaning the house and my t-shirt was in the other room, which was shut or something. And my mom was like, just clean it without it. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, why am I shy to walk without a t-shirt, you know?
Yeah.
And then, so I'm like, I mean, because I've been, I was a really obese kid and have had like a fat kid inside me and things like that, you know, like just that person. But I was like, why not? Big deal. What will happen? You know, and then I did it. And I was like, dude, I'm going to do this for the next 100 days. And I didn't say 100 days. I said, let's go with it. I didn't go with the number 100. But when I reached 50, I didn't feel like stopping. So I
it's
like,
also because you came so far. Now, how do I go back on this?
Yeah. And so it was a lot of fun, dude. I got to do so. Like, it was like, people really went from, ew, why the fuck are you doing this, to, dude, this is like, we really respect this. And it is like, it is like, that was a beautiful thing to see. And when I put it together, that video, I like, whoa, dude, I'm happy I did.
Yeah, I know. You feel happy that you have accomplished something which you thought might be a little bit difficult to finish.
And now honestly, like, if I ever have a thought of... Also, it's that 100 days is the best way to make a habit, right? So if you ever have a... Like, 100 days cultivates a good habit. And I think after that, in general, if I'm uncomfortable about something, I know that feeling of how to push myself. I go like, it's uncomfortable right now. Push it a little and you'll be okay.
Yeah, that's like a cookie jar of all the good shit that you've done, right? So you can just pull it up and be like, hey, I remember I did that 100-day challenge. Yeah, it kind of builds on itself. So it pushes you to do a bigger challenge or a new challenge next time.
Man, I got over so many fears of mine. Like, so many irrational fears that I used to have.
What is the most among all of that?
Like, dude, I didn't cycle for like 18, 19 years of my life. Because like, I was really scared to cycle on the road as a child. Because my mom didn't let me. And I was so scared, dude. And then I started cycling and I'm like, wow, this is not as bad as it is. And like, you know, so like, just like a lot of different things. But like, a lot of things with eating food, a lot of things. Like, I can actually roam around without my t-shirt now and be completely...
comfortable with it.
Very comfortable. I'll be like weird for like 2 minutes and then I'll be like, this is it, man. This is my body.
Yeah.
What do I do? So...
But it's actually pretty cool, dude. Was there like a really small thing that annoyed you? Right, which you kind of got rid of, like a really small thing. Like, for example, like, you know how people get annoyed with other people using cutlery like really loudly on the table, right? Like,
why the fuck
are you using it? So can you be a little quiet while eating? Was there a really small thing that you just said, fuck it?
Like one of these ticks or what? I actually didn't see it that way. I saw it more as, I mean, I did. Like, one thing that was like, there's somebody I didn't like for many, many years. And then which was like a very big ego thing. And I asked him for a game of Ludo.
That was something right. That was like small but really big for me.
But did they figure it out? Like, why is he asking me? He doesn't really like me. Or they're just like, hey,
I told them. I was like, listen.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
You should have mentioned that in the video. Like, after me telling them that I didn't like them.
It is like an evident thing that that person knows. Like, it's like mutual. It's mutual dislike. So, and I was like, dude, I'm doing this thing and would you mind playing? And they're like, yeah, sure. Okay, let's play.
Yeah.
So that was the thing.
Oh, that's pretty hard, dude, actually. Like, even that's been so weird, right? Like, even in the last 6 years, you meet a lot of people just in stand-up alone whom you just can't, you just don't like them for some reason or the other, right? Because they would have either said something horrible to you before you went on stage or would have, just randomly just made some inappropriate, comment or whatever, right? And then for you to actually get yourself to be a place and be like, hey, I still don't know. Like, I'm in a weird place. I'm like, do I make peace with this fact that this person is just like that? Or do I address it and try to be that person's friend, right? But I think you went the other way of saying, hey, let me... But was it like a thing of let me try to be his friend or let me just try to deal with his discomfort?
I feel like it was more about getting over my own pride. I was like, I don't want to have any pride about this situation. So that's where it came from. It was very less to do about like I want to be friends with this person in the long term. Because I feel like if you dislike somebody, you dislike somebody for reasons, right? You have a lot of reasons to also dislike them. It's not like I mean, and forgetting and forgiving and all those are good things in life, and you should. And I'm very pro them, and I do that all the time. But sometimes it is also a choice not to indulge in it again. You know, so I feel like it was that where I was like, I don't want to be this guy's friend. I just not want to be a spiteful person.
Yeah, you don't want to be like, it's weird when you meet someone you hate also. It's not talked about that much. It's really hard, right? Because you can't, like, how much of being a bashful person, you can't be that bashful all the time when you meet them, right? You can't be cunty all the time. You'll have to you'll have to deal with them, dude. It's not talked about at all. And how do you deal with that? It's a very weird thing. You either acknowledge and be like, hey, nice to see you, and go and do your own shit, and that person's still there, and you can still feel that person's presence, right?
I also just feel like, personally, as a person, I sometimes don't have chill. Like, it shows on my face. Like, if I'm uncomfortable, don't like somebody, I just, like, my face shows it, man. Like, I can do whatever the fuck I want. It's just, like, it's a teller. So it is like that person comes to know.
Yeah, I think, I would say I have the same category, dude. I wish I could be that chill, be like, hey, I think the other person thinks I like them, right? Show on our face.
Yeah, like I deceived them.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good, dude. And you didn't miss 100 days. So you didn't take the weekends off, nothing.
Oh, nothing. That was like, and it was really tough for some days, like you're working late and at 4 in the morning, you have to think of something because, like, dude, it made me so disciplined those 100 days, dude. Like, there are things that I still do form that time. So I have a bunch of routines as a person I do every day. Like, I do Tai Chi every day for 5 minutes. I write a gratitude journal. I write affirmations. I do some free writing. And, I'll do my prayers and things like that. And this all just came. And, like, I've been doing intermittent fasting since then. And, that just came because of that 100 days of discipline. So, now, like, even though, like, for the last 1.5 months, I have not been as disciplined with my diet or working out and all, I have these bunch of things I do, and they still keep me grounded. So, I'm just like, okay, this is who I am. It's actually something I always wanted. You know, how you look at grandparents and go, like, dude, like, grandparents, like, they'll have these things about they'll never miss their routine. Wake up, go to the temple, go for a walk, do, like, these 3-4 things that they do. And I always actually admired it. Because I feel like that's what defines you as a person. That what gives you, like, a... Think of this is who this person is, you know? And I always wanted that. And I'm really glad that came about.
So, in a way, we're all very happy that, right? Like, comedy took us, it kind of broke us to some extent, but it also helped us in fixing, it gave us, like, the tools of, you know, fixing us back.
Yeah, man. Comedy does that. Yeah. I think it's a brutally beautiful thing to, like, you know? It is really that. It is, like, and I feel like that's honestly any art. I feel like any art is brutal, but it's also beautiful. It's just about what... I mean, it's emotional focus, right? It's about what do you want to concentrate on more. You can concentrate on the brutality and, like, you know, whatever of it. And same with the person you hate, by the way. Like, you know, you can look at a person and go, like, it's just emotional focus. It's about what do you want? What are you seeing in this person? I'm saying because eventually you hate them for either they have something in you that you don't like,
or that you want, or it's because they are so much like you. Like, it is never...
You really think it's just that?
It is never... It can't be anything else, because in between is indifferent.
Now I have to think about that. I have to re-listen to this entire thing and be like, okay. But so if you're saying like if there's someone whom you hate, it's either because they are better than you or they're too identical to you. Yeah, you really feel that? It's questionable.
See, because I'm saying it's like even when you like, and I feel like the another way to look at this, somebody would be like, yeah, but what if like they are so different from me? It's because they oppose me. You know, that's also a reason you hate people. Like, people have opposing views and things like that. But I feel like even in the opposition, what you hate about that entire point is that the identical parts of you. I'm saying, for example.
Oh, right. For sure.
You don't hate
all of them. You just hate that one portion that's like that's on the same playing field as yours.
Correct. And that's why you hate the passion for the topic that as much as you have. You're like, fucking, how's this person? It's either too identical or it's something that you need.
Yeah, but that's like an argument, right? Like, if you have a really bad argument with someone, it's exactly that. You just hate like their view on that particular topic. I think everything else is okay, but just their view. And sometimes
don't think it's the view, to be honest. Like, I feel like you never hate the view of the person. I feel like you hate the fact that they are not agreeing with you. That they do not like... I feel like anything in life, that any negative emotion starts with a positive emotion, is what I've learned. And that's really been a game changer for me as a person. Where I feel like even when you're angry at somebody, right? Like, fucking furious. And you just step back and you're like, why am I angry? Right? Well, this person spoke to me badly. That's, for example, you just say that. This person doesn't know how to talk. Okay, so they didn't speak to you well. You come back a step a little more. Okay, which means you want to be spoken well too, you know? You want, so I'm saying, you take one more step.
At some point, you want them to like you.
Yeah, because you want respect. You come back. It's because, you think you're someone who deserves respect. So it also always starts with you. It starts from a place of love for yourself that you did not get, right? And that's why you get angry at that other person. So it's like every negative emotion has a positive need in you that's not been met.
That is actually quite true.
And however much that is, like, it is impossible that it's not, because otherwise it's indifference. No, otherwise you don't give a fuck.
Yeah, which I think at some point does happen. Like, at some point you do kind of you kind of make your peace with me. Like, hey, I think you know what's changed even with this whole thing about like just whatever you're talking about, right? Like with the arguments. Like, the one thing I have learned, right, through having pointless arguments with a couple of people and not winning and still being angry and felt like I won, but when I lost, and the other person feels the same way, like, hey, I won, but I lost, right? Is that I think I just don't have to win it. I just don't have to be right, dude. I don't, it doesn't matter. How does it matter? It doesn't matter if I'm right on this side or not. Like, let the other person think that they won. I just have to just say like, hey, dude, I think it's just the way we see things differently. And that's all.
Yeah, man, it always comes down to pride. It's about like, you know, how many of these arguments have you looked at and somebody just goes like, yeah, you're right. You know, when was the last time that was the result? Yeah,
case, it wouldn't have been an argument. Like, there's a difference between someone, again, this might seem a little egotistical, but like when like, there's a difference between you having a conversation with me, right? And you actually want to know like a different perspective. Then you're like, hey, I really want to listen to you, right? And I want to know why you feel that way. That's a different conversation, as opposed to, dude, what you're saying is absolutely bullshit, right? And this is how shit works. And there's very few of those conversations where people, like you said, say like, hey, you know what, you're right, thanks for helping me see things differently. That doesn't
happen. Analyzation or arguments, it is nothing really in between. Like, there is no, you're analyzing and you're taking it in and you're like, okay, because analyzation has like a sense of rationalization to it, and you're like, cool, I'm going to rationalize this in my head and pick the side that I feel is the fairer side or the more positive side or whatever your moral systems are as a person. And like, I think the other way is just about, I want to be right. And fuck what you're saying.
Which was old me.
Which is all old of us, man. It's really... And you know what would be really shocking, man? It might be next to you when you become old. Like, when you like... It's like when you're old and all, you just go like, I know it. I'm fucking right. Like, it's like there are very few people... Like our parents, right? Like, our parents are very not... They're not okay with being wrong. You know? Mm. That's why people use things like, how could you speak to me like that? I'm older than you. So...
Yeah.
You know, it's like it is not coming from a place of learning or, you know, any of those things.
Yeah, I think something, did you watch like the Dave Chappelle, David Letterman? I hate doing this, but I have to do it because it's too relevant to a conversation, right? There's a conversation between Dave Chappelle and Dave Letterman, right? Dave Letterman. And I think Dave Chappelle is saying, I think the right way to be a parent, in my opinion, is that you're an open book. Like, you don't have to like tell your kids what to do, right? But if they actually ask you for something, you're like, dude, you're a rich library full of stories when you can explain stories to them from your life. Yeah. And I think that's pretty much how it is, dude, which is why I don't really care about, like, even my opinion on religion, right, has changed after this, right? Like, because how much of, like, just like what we were talking about, like, how you have an argument and say, like, hey, I am right about this, I know I'm right about this, and you need to know that I am right, and you need to believe the same thing. I think this entire thing of religion has also just been that, right, from a large extent. It's just people saying, like, hey, we've got it down to a T, we've got the formula, we've got, like, the to-do list of things that you've got to do. I think people will figure it out.
Man, it's also, and I feel like, when it comes to, like, so, I mean, I'm like, it's like my entire thing with religion is kind of really, really awkward as a person, to be very honest, is because, I mean, not awkward, it's interesting in the sense that I belong to like a very right-wing Hindu house, right? Yeah. Like my dad prays for 1.5 hour in the morning, 1.5 hour at night. It's like we have the biggest temple and everything. And I believe in Jesus.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I had like a full like calling and things like that, and I had like a full switch. And I mean, it's not like I'm baptized or any of that.
Yeah.
Right?
But you just like believe.
I just believe. Like, I have faith, right? And I've had faith for a while now. And that is something which is so tough at home, dude, to just explain it. It's like you're like, you're just like, what? Because like it's like they think, so I had to explain to them really that the idea, you think I am following another religion, but that's not true. I'm just following another faith. Right.
Yeah.
I'm saying that is something that you really need to understand. Like, I'm not going and like, you know, observing Lent or like, you know, celebrating Easter or like, you know, any of those. Like, I'm not like going and like eating communions for breakfast. You know, I'm not doing that. Like that is not happening. So, and I just believe in it. And I think that's what, like, this gives me peace and has given me a path and has made me a better person. So I feel like this is it. It took very long for them to honestly realize this. And now I see slow realizations because they are so used to a conditioning and working in a structure of you need to do this to get this. This is the right way to do it. This is the wrong way to do it. And I feel the same for people who've grown up Christian. Like I'm saying, you've grown up, you've grown up Catholic, I'm guessing?
No, I've grown up. My dad was actually a pastor for the first 15 years of my life. And before he left. Yeah, so it's too close to... Like, Christianity is like too close to home. Yeah.
Right. So I totally get that, man. Like, in terms of like, and so I feel like when you grow in any kind of structure, and the more rigid it gets, the more suffocating it is, right? As any structure and for anything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
When it becomes a ritual, that's where it becomes like, you know, like I said, suffocating. But I feel like once you just have faith and it, then it develops you as a person, and spirituality.
I started this by saying, like, I think even religion, right? Like, the reason why there's so much of oppression with people just shoving religion into everyone's throat is like, hey, maybe they are not going to make the right choices if you don't tell them. I think now that's kind of figured out. I think, like, dude, eventually people will figure it out for themselves. And if they don't, karma or whatever will let them know that they're not on the right path. And then eventually you try and course correct and you come on the right path, right? And I think if we all just not be like forceful of like values or like even in comedy, dude, like you're just telling other comedians like who started after you, this is how comedy works, right? And that's when they're gonna hate you.
Right? That's the biggest cock you can tell anyone in comedy. It's like, this is how comedy works. Like, fuck you, man. The point of comedy is to be irreverent. Now if we go and on stage and we're like, no, but you do you have to be ethical? Definitely, you know, be ethical, you know, but don't, the point is to be irreverent. You know, the point is to fucking do shit that nobody's done. Okay. Otherwise, we're just sheep. You know, you're just making more of us every day. Like, we're a sausage fucking factory. That's what it is. And I feel like it just, and that blows my mind about, I feel like any systemic approach to anything is made for domestication and control, right? And the same with, like, I think when this starts happening with, whether that's religion or comedy. Once you say this is how it is, that's where it's already not how it should be.
Yeah, that's how we know it's wrong. That's how we know it's a fraud.
I'm saying, of course, do you follow ethics on stage? Do you get off when you're shown the light? Do you make sure that people have a good time? Do you not steal someone's jokes? Do you write original stuff? Of course, these are ethics, right? Which is morality, you know. Like, but if under the garb of, but when you make
say, restriction of movement a part of morality, I feel like that's where it's really dicey.
Right, yeah, because you're taking away people's freedom and you're just controlling them in a way. So that, you know, in a way that your convenience the most. So like, hey, people behave well around you so that you and your yeah. beliefs are once again reaffirmed and all of that. Yeah, it's a...
Yeah. Also, it's worse because you cannot actually reprimand them, right? It's not like the law, you know. It's not like yeah. there is a so you reprimand you can't send them at a moral prison. Level. You can't.
But you do that right? by so, just shaming them or whatever, right?
So yeah. it's emotional prisons. It is emotional prisons of guilt, of like emotional prisons of like shame, like you said. It is emotional prisons of like, you know, what will happen. It's like, you know, so it's basically that.
That's kind of fucked up with the way you put it, like emotional prisons. I can automatically think, like even for example, when you don't like a person, for example, you don't like a person and you write a blog about them to just say, or you write a set about them or whatever, and you just say like, hey, how horrible the other person is, right? You actually, in a way, are putting them in some sort of an emotional prison. It's not like an actual prison, but it's there.
Dude, you're making them feel... Yeah, absolutely right. And I feel like we do that so much with everything. Like, I feel the idea of, like emotional... And I think, in fact, it's very funny. Like, and I'll take something from... And you might know this. It's the biblical thing of, like, they say, where, for example, when... I think Paul was imprisoned for many, many years. I think, yeah. like, he was awaiting his trial for many years, right? As an yeah. apostle. Because, the Pharisees didn't like him and the Romans and things like that, whatever. And right. I feel like there's a part where Paul in the Bible says, I'm in prison, but I'm free. I'm freer than all of you. right.
Right.
And
right.
I feel yeah. like because I feel like that is such a state of mind. Like, say, for example, when you see Munawar putting a video of or picture of him smiling right out of prison, man, it's really about the emotional state of prison he was in. You can be physically in a prison, but if you're mentally free, you're free. You know, which is why you yeah. hear things like, you know, Gandhi came out and became a visionary. Nelson Mandela wrote a talk. You know, it's like, it's because they were emotionally okay. They were not emotionally in a prison. And I feel like sometimes...
Like their spirit was not broken.
And I mean, spirit not broken also is like, I feel is a different thing altogether. But it's just about, do you actually let your own mind suffocate you? Or do you let your own mind feel like you're restricted? Because restriction is a mind thing.
So there are a lot of people like almost imprisoned, but are actually free. They're actually free. They're living in good houses, doing good stuff. But they're actually still like in jail, right?
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
still like and, slaves.
Right. And the other way around is that there are people on stage really in an imprisoned mindset, you know, of whether they'll make it or whether they'll not. And that's like, you can see that.
Yeah, like, dude, if you think about it that way, it seems so stupid. Like, all of us, every time we question our own, like, not making it, we're supposed to be free, dude. We're on stage. We don't have a band, right? We don't have a manager. We don't have anyone. We don't have a boss. All you need to do is, it's your audience for a while. And, like, it's not like someone else's audience. It's your, unless you were opening for someone. But if you're doing, like, a small...
It is still your audience. Like for that, when they're in front of you, they're yours for however long right. they are.
Exactly. You still have an audience, right? With whom you can tell anything to. Anything, dude. Any fucking thing you can tell, right? And you still feel like, oh shit, man. I feel like comedy has really clipped my wings so much. This is such an irony. I think this was a very deep conversation, dude. Not excuse the pun, right? But it's just like, it is a very deep conversation because we talked a lot of things just segueing from comedy. But yeah, are there any closing thoughts that you want to talk about? Anything that you want to talk about before we come to the end of this?
Man, probably just one thing I think we left out in the conversation was about this is a realization I've had this week is that I was recording a bunch of things and I will put them up like really soon. I've not put up stand-up in very long and my old stand-up is something I'm not very proud of now. But there are some bits like, so I was just recording this week and I had this thought about, I think whenever you're recording a set, you get really fucking nervous because you're just like, I'm paying money. People should laugh. I should get this. Like there's this idea of perfection that you need to achieve when you're on stage. And this week is something before I went on stage, I just had this thought in my mind where I was just like, you know what? Just be fucking imperfect. That's one part of it. Okay? Because the more you try to be imperfect, the more you'll be chill and you'll do well as opposed to the idea of perfection, 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 delivery, delivery, delivery. You'll really lose out the soul of what you're doing if you take so much of the method, you know? Yeah. And that was one thing. And the other thought I had was about,
it's this thing about, I feel for anyone who's been doing something for very, very long, right? I think we get really stuck in who we used to be, you know, and that who we used to be is not usually a high moment in our lives. You know what I mean? It's like, for example, I was going to record, and I know I have recorded when I was 3 years into comedy and 2 years into comedy, and I just felt like not good as a person, or I felt like, oh my God, people, I really care about what people think about me and things like that. And when I was going this time, I just had this thought of like, you're not the same person. Okay, you are a, you have done a lot more comedy since then. You're a more mature person now. So whenever I think, so then I could own up to who I was today, right? It's the same, like, I feel like when you are, like, say, for example, like this is an example where I play basketball, and there was a school tournament that I played, and I missed a very, very easy shot, and we lost. Now, till around 1 year ago, I every time took that shot, I missed it.
Oh, right? Shit.
Because and it was like an under the board, really simple shot and things like that. And I was just like, because I thought I am still that person, you know, every time I take that shot. Yeah. But I didn't think that, but I'm not now, you know, I've learned a lot more. I've played a lot more. I've become fitter. I've become better. Right. And I feel like we do a lot of these things. We like, I think talking about emotional prisons, our emotional prisons usually become who we were long time ago at our lowest. But we are not that. I'm not the 13-year-old, like, you know, chubby boy that I was. I am not that person anymore, you know. I am way more disciplined now. I am a lot. So it's about, I feel like if anyone can take anything out of this podcast, if they've reached till here, okay, which will basically, but like, if you have any of these emotional prisons that you need to get out of, just know you're better than that now. You are not the person who you used to be. You're way more wise now. You're way stronger now. You're way, like, evolved and mature now. And I think once we start owning up to who we are today, we really care less about who we are going to become.
Yeah, you become a lot more freer in that way, right? Of letting yourself evolve in life, and also I think in creativity and all of that. Like, you're not just binding yourself to like a particular mantra that you based your earlier stuff that worked on. Yeah. Cool, thanks, man. So much, Deep, for
thank
doing
you so
this
much, man.
Really had a good conversation. Really had fun speaking with you on a bunch of things, man.
Same here, dude. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. If people can follow you, why don't you just quickly plug your social media handles, and then we'll call it a day on this podcast.
Yeah, it's Deep Chhabria. It's really simple. So anyone wants to follow, like, Instagram would be nice. I put up a lot of like weird different shit, so you all can, like, it'll be nice to, like, yeah. And I reply to everybody.
Awesome.
Because, like, it's just nice. Yeah.
And it's also the good things of not being too famous also. We can reply to everybody.
Oh, it's the best thing, man. You really can. You really can.
Okay. Cool, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks so much, Deep, for doing this.